You want to do a little intro, everybody, so you know who's in the room? Well, I'm Robin Provost, Chair of the Select Board.
Sue Lively.
Good to see you, sir.
Elisa Vieringo.
Hilma Sumner, Town Board.
Oh, yeah.
Paula, here, Chair.
Finance Committee.
Well, I'm a member of Finance Committee.
Robert Dan, member of Finance Committee.
Ned Wolf, Finance Committee.
You guys.
Oh, I'm just a town person, Devin Clark.
Hi, Devin.
You're just a town person.
Not just.
I'm just a town person.
No.
Good to see you.
And I'm just a town person, Barbara Gordon.
And in the way back, and you know Brian. So, 2 points of information. So 2 points is, first of all, Pat is here. She represents, not only is she just a resident, but she also does Heath Connects, takes notes, and those go online for folks to follow the meetings. And the meeting is audio recorded every week by Barbara, between the two of them, how that gets online. But Barbara has been here since she started this religiously for every meeting. So
that's great.
So we hope to achieve getting the information out to as many people as can be. So welcome.
Thank you.
What would you like to say to us?
This is really just an opportunity for me to touch base with you all. This is something that I do annually. Meet with all 17 select boards in the first Franklin District. Just to make sure that what I'm working on in Boston is what is important to you. And certainly to answer any questions that you have, but this is really an opportunity for me to hear from you to make sure that I'm doing everything that I can for the town of Boston. So I'm just going to turn it over to
Turn it over
you.
To us.
Fire away, or comments, or questions, whatever you want to have.
So as the good leader, I always let everybody else talk first. And as Lisa's already pointed out, I always look over here first to Sue.
Seniority, goes that way. I'm the new one.
And since Sue only has, April?
6 weeks.
6 weeks. She's all done. She can let everything fly right now. She got nothing. You don't hold anything back. You might as well let it go.
I have one thing that came up just recently at one of our meetings. A few weeks ago, we had representatives from Coleraine Ambulance Association come and talking about the ambulance situation for West County. And I'm guessing that you probably have already talked to some of them about it and are aware of it.
Yes.
Because you represent Coleraine as well.
Yes.
But there were a couple of things that were said that kind of surprised me that I didn't realize. One of them is that Massachusetts does not see the ambulance service as an essential
service.
We kind of see it as pretty essential up here.
I kind of do as well.
We're an aging community. We're at the best 40 minutes from the hospital. That's in a car, and that's not waiting for the ambulance to come get you first. We have a lot of people who are living alone or who are living with a senior spouse who's not really prepared to take care of them if there's an emergency. And they are having financial issues. Part of it is the tax that's being put on them, which is, I think, 6.8%. Because they're a nonprofit. And another piece of it was that when they figured that a run cost them about $2,400, that's not including gas and whether there's some other special services thrown in there. But when they bill a person's insurance, they have to take whatever the insurance approves of. And they cannot then bill the client for the remaining difference. Medicare right now is around $500 a person, a run, which falls far short of what it's costing them to do it.
Right.
And they're competing with other businesses that make it hard for them to keep good people. Because you can go to other places and make more for the same job.
Yeah.
And they are the only ones in West County
yeah.
that are doing it, that have the paramedic service. So anything that you can do to help move forward, some kind of improvement in the situation for the ambulance would be something I'd love to see happen.
Yeah. I'm happy to follow up with Coleraine too, and just mm-hmm. mention that it was brought up here.
Yep.
And that, you know, yeah. see what, if there's anything that our office can
do. Yeah, I mean, we're adding, they're now going to a service fee for us.
Mm-hmm.
And we're adding 20? What do we add?
Well, we have to finalize that number, but it's
right,
going to be...
Oh, you mean the financial
minimum,
number?
The minimum thing was going to be 20,000, right?
Something like
I
that.
So.
That we're having to add to our budget, for sure.
Okay.
Right, to help cover the costs of every call that comes this way.
Okay.
22,000. So that was the big thing I wanted to bring up tonight.
That's good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm actually going to defer to you right now while I try to collect some thoughts.
I'm going to actually open it up to Finance Committee because
okay.
they come next if you're good waiting.
I'm totally fine with that, yeah.
So the next person I'm going to go to right behind you, yeah, take
just
a sip, two for everyone, move the chair.
Yeah.
So Tom is Sue's husband, he's the chair of Finance and he's all done. So have at it, Tom.
you're riding off into the sunset.
They're pretty much like
retirement
that.
Looks good.
Everybody's leaving.
Unless he's a write-in.
Well, even if it was a write-in, it's probably
declined.
Jesus.
Trying to get out of your way. Seems like it didn't work.
Well, if I feel like I'm a lot of the other members that are here in town that are not headed for retirement, hopefully. I'll be able to do that as well. But I feel in a lot of ways that I'm leaving the hole. Kind of like water. Never really sure for very long. But anyways, there's got to be ways to encourage new members to various town committees that the town needs, not necessarily a committee, but I'm hoping that people will afford, but we also have to make presentations somehow to try to get full slate of offices or all the various committees that we have. I'd like to let the other committee members comment about some of the issues that we've been talking about over like the last year, maybe.
Don't forget to talk up, so it's
yes.
you're heard.
Well,
use your voices.
And one of the things I wanted to bring up is that, unfortunately, I didn't bring the recorder article with me, but Brian DeVries had dropped off an article regarding basically grants that have been given to, what is it, Deerfield and Bernardston by the federal government, and Jim McGovern
mm-hmm.
is responsible for that.
Mm-hmm.
So the money is out there, and we just need to get some money flowing here, for instance, for salt shed, which is dearly in need of replacement. We're probably furthest ahead on that. But also an improvement in our fire station. I think you've seen our
yes, I've seen
one,
your fire station.
Putting a door and almost fell in the fire engine. That was pretty bad. Well, and the latest thing was, not to whine, but you're here, I will.
Go ahead, you morning.
our brush truck, which is supposedly in a climate-controlled garage, it's insulated. Well, somehow no one had realized that breaker had been thrown and the heat was off for a long enough time that the pump on it froze and was damaged. Now, luckily, it was kind of a chunky pump anyway, and we can probably find a used replacement for it. But the fire chief and I were just talking about that. But that's sort of typical of the problems that we're encountering.
That's the facilities.
Yes, that's facility. Now, that said, Brian, as you know, has drawn up plans for a proposed fire garage here on this site. And picked up on that before Brian left off and left the select board, and have gone after quotes on the building, having the building done. I've gone to Morton Building and they're working on a quote, and also Butler. They were more reluctant to take it on when they heard it was a municipal job. The reason being is the whole prevailing wage thing that we have to deal with, where you're familiar with that. And the problem is it's not as easy for a small town to pay prevailing wage as for, say, Cambridge, Wellesley, or Concord. I grew up in Eastern part of the state, so I know what kind of money they have there.
Right.
That's not what we have here. So we're the long and short of it is we're working to get some quotes, you know, for shovel-ready projects. But once we have those, we are going to need some help obtaining funds to help us. And also, again, the prevailing wage thing is a real issue as far as even getting people to be interested.
And how much do you have an estimate for the salt shed?
You have Robin's.
$350,000.
That's for the smaller one, right?
I thought that was the bigger one.
It's going to be up there.
Okay. And you're waiting for quotes back on this fire building?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I thought we had a fire ready project already.
We do have a design.
Design.
We just want to find the numbers.
Yeah.
Okay. Working, yeah.
Okay.
That's going to be well over $1 million. That'll be up closer to $2 million, prevailing wage.
Jim McGovern came out here, right?
Yes, and the same list exists.
The
same list exists.
So have you been in, so once you get that for the fire building,
yeah,
your quote, definitely, yeah, be in touch with his office.
Okay.
Do you happen to know when he puts out his letter about available
congressional, the congressional meeting?
Mark Ann Warren, are you there?
CBS out there.
Yeah.
So I think that's out now.
Okay.
I don't know what the deadline.
Mark and Warren's are out. I didn't see it, but you're saying they go out usually around the same time.
I don't know where they are in the process.
Okay. Because I haven't seen anything. You know, who gets his newsletters.
Yeah. I can try to track that down for you. And then on the, you know, just generally speaking, on public safety and municipal buildings, we did put forward that legislation again this session. It has been extended by the committee, so we're waiting to hear how that bill will be dispensed of. Unfortunately, right now we are seeing some pretty difficult financial times at the state level that are forcing us to have to make some pretty difficult budgetary decisions. The House will take up its budget on April 10th. The budget will be released on April 10th. And we'll be taking it up in the House that last week of April. So that's coming up really fast for us. But you know, we're just not seeing the level of growth that we have been seeing in recent years in terms of revenue. And it's just pretty much, it is flat. So that's the budget that we're dealing with for FY25.
Without ARPA. The ARPA dollars.
Yeah. We'll see what the budget looks like when it comes out, but we've been warned not to be too optimistic this year. So we'll see how that plays out with that bill, which would require money, and see whether or not we're able to get that across the finish line. I can tell you, and I think we talked about this last year, getting the chair of the committee out here into Western Massachusetts and showing him Ashfield and Conway. It certainly gave him a perspective that he didn't have before. And he's now talking about rural communities in committee meetings. He was hearing a bill, and I ran into him afterwards, and he asked the question, what impact will this have on rural communities in Massachusetts? So we're slowly turning people to think about rural communities when, you know, we are considering legislation or programs or policies. One of the things that's new, I think, since last time I saw you is that we do have an Office of Rural Policy now. Ann Govey is going full steam ahead with that in terms of helping to lift up our voices. And so that's been super helpful. And I have to say, this administration has been incredibly supportive of rural communities, not only with rural school aid, but also in H2. The governor has proposed a $24 million rural road fund that's being proposed. The proposed funding source is the millionaire's tax or the fair share amendment. So that is not something that we would have seen previously, we didn't see, but she seems to really get what's happening in rural communities and is trying to be helpful. So we're hopeful that that money will make it through.
Well, thank you for everything.
Yeah. Well, just keep trying.
Finance committee.
We have a voice there.
Yeah.
So. Hi, Robert McGann, also finance committee. I'm going to continue with wine.
Please.
The biggest problem I see that we have, I mean, not that the salt shed isn't big, but our school levy is killing us. Mm-hmm. It's in the vicinity of $1 million. And it's not going to go down. And it's a consequence of us falling on our sword, closing this school 5 years ago, and school choice. And it was Byzantine algorithm that the state goes through to allocate aid. It's indecipherable to me.
Yeah.
But, and I don't know, there's probably nothing that you can do directly, but if you can put some bugs in the right ears to try and smooth that out and make it more equitable,
yeah,
it would really help, because that's over, and that's half of our budget.
Yeah. You know. We put bugs in ears. So I'm a member of the Ways and Means Committee, which is fascinating, but it also allows me the opportunity to go to the 8 budget hearings across the Commonwealth. Each budget hearing focuses in on a different area. And the one at Greenfield Community College was on education, where we pressed the secretary very hard on rural schooling. We talked about the inflation factor that is at 1.35% right now. It should probably be up at 3% as part of the formula. We talked a lot at that hearing about minimum school aid and the fact that it really needs to be up at about $100 per student. We talked about regional school transportation that we should fund at 100%. We also talked about vocational, non-resident transportation as well, which not in the FY24 budget, but in the FY23 budget, it was funded at $250,000. The actual cost is somewhere between $4 and $5 million to cover the actual costs in the state. So in FY24, we were able to bump that from $250,000 up to $1 million, and we're trying to get that even further this budget. I'm trying to think. Rural schools, to transportation, inflation factor, minimum school aid. So I'm the vice chair of the Regional Schools Caucus, and those are the things that we're going to be fighting for in the budget to try to get those numbers up to what we heard they needed to be at that Ways and Means hearing. And I will also say that Senator Comerford was chairing that particular hearing. We were sitting next to each other, and we pressed the secretary on whether or not he would be willing to take another look at the Chapter 70 formula. Because we're seeing that now it's not only rural schools that are struggling, it's also sort of these mid, the Amherst and the Northamptons as well. And when you have that many schools that are struggling, there are now 211 minimum aid school districts in the Commonwealth. Something's not working the way that it should be. So we did get a commitment from him that if the legislature wanted to move forward with taking a look at Chapter 70, opening it back up again, that he would certainly be a willing partner in that. So that would require legislation, it would require time, it would require a great deal of public input. I can tell you that from the Rural Schools Commission, which took us, you know, a good year and then another 6 months to draft the legislation to incorporate all of the recommendations. So if we were to go forward with that, it would still take some time. It's not going to be a solution that's going to come quickly or easily if we do reopen the Chapter 70 formula. But we are, you know, as a caucus, and I'm also on the rural caucus, which is meeting tomorrow. So the rural caucus and the regional schools caucus, which are members of the House and Senate, will be pushing for those particular line items so that we can try to get more money to communities in that way. And so that's more of the short-term solution.
All right, well, thanks for listening.
Yeah, absolutely.
I just want, before Ned, I just wanted to back up because actually, Bob, you hit one of the topics that I was going to bring up. And those hard numbers are, I mean, we're looking at a budget in our budget, you know, we're going through budget season right now. So we're looking at a $2.7 million budget, of which over 1.1 is our education budget. So those numbers are, that's not a, you know, those numbers are real. And there's something that make it so difficult for us that the rest of that $1.5 million, when you figure out all of the things we have to cover with that, we're struggling.
Yeah.
We are really struggling. Having no commerce in Heath, it's everything is tax dollar. So to get that money from less than 700 people, including everybody, it's almost impossible to figure out how to work that budget with everything that we're hitting at that we need. You know, we've talked about the salt shed, we talked about the fire department, it's everything, it's infrastructure. Our roads, the money we get for our roads, nowhere near enough, absolutely nowhere near enough. We have roads that are disintegrating, that I don't know where we're gonna get.
Yeah.
And if you going back to the prevailing wage piece, you go out for bid on these jobs and they want millions of dollars to do the roads. We don't have that, we just don't have access to that money. I mean, we just barely buy the trucks we need to keep up the roads that we have.
Right.
And try to do the repairs in-house. We as a town are making serious decisions every year, cutting people that work for us. You know, really making significant cuts to try to do what we can to control it, our portion of the budget, but it's not gonna be enough long-term. I mean, we really are in a position, if you add up all of those infrastructure, our buildings, we have buildings owned by the town, all of them need work. They all need, you know, we need work done for accessibility. We need work done to keep roofs safe. We need work done to keep foundations dry. We have all sorts of things that we're working on. And it's not that we're not trying. We have great people working on grants. We have an amazing number of grants that are coming to us.
Mm-hmm.
We're taking every one of them we can. We have one right now going that is a matching grant. There's a group of volunteers that are working to raise the matching portion of that, which is $17,000. That's a lot of money for people in this small town to start to try to raise. So it's not for lack of trying. I think that everybody is putting what they can into the process. It's just we've got to figure out that conduit to get more grant applications, more opportunities that we can look for, and some assistance on some of that infrastructure, because we're just not going to be able to. We're not going to be able to go to the taxpayer for all of that. Our salt shed's going to, you know, we're lucky it hasn't collapsed. We keep crossing our fingers and saying, one more year, one more year, one more year.
Yeah, one more year. I got the big tour of this whole
thing. And we talk about the fire department, that highway garage. There's so many issues that we need to tackle.
Yeah.
Sometimes trying to figure out what we can in what order is a challenge.
Right.
So since we can't, like you talk about the school part, there isn't a quick fix. We can all keep chugging along. What we have to do is try to offset some of those that are more quick fixes. We have to pick off the other low-hanging fruit to try to offset that.
Yeah.
So Helma, did you want to add something else to what Bob was saying, and then Ed's turn?
Yeah, piggyback on what Bob was saying about education. You know, there was, I believe, proposed by the governor, a rural aid for education bill. And it went, what I understand is it went to committee, and committee totally rewrote it. And
that's my bill.
That's your bill?
Yeah.
The original, sorry, the original bill. Hopefully the original bill, because in terms of the evaluation of the educators in small towns, say the rewritten bill does us next to nothing. It was totally rewritten, and I mean, even as it is, I believe this year, like our school district got 90%, and it must be every school district, got 90% transportation reimbursement, and right now they're proposing 60% for next year. I mean, that hurts.
We're trying to get that up.
To say the very least.
Yeah.
That hurts, and it hurts that whoever rewrites a bill that was written in a very sensitive manner to really benefit rural communities and rural towns, and it was totally rewritten, and basically the money was, the financial benefit was thrown out.
Gutted is the word you're looking for.
What?
It wasn't rewritten, it was gutted. Gutted is the word you're looking for.
Yeah, so that bill is the result of the Rural Schools Commission that I chaired with Senator Adam Hines. The commission report included 36 recommendations, and we tried to get as many of those recommendations packaged up into a bill, and so that is the Rural Schools legislation. The bill came out of committee significantly changed. The goal is to reintroduce that bill at the beginning of next session, because the way that it was rewritten, I don't think it's going to get out of committee to whatever the next step is. So in the long term, that is the plan, is to, you know, take a look at the bill. Are there ways that we can make it stronger or tweak it? And reintroduce it at the beginning of next session. And in the meantime, you know, thinking short and long term, the rural school aid line item is what we're really fighting for. So when I first came in office 5 years ago, that rural school aid was being funded at $1.5 million. Today it's being funded at $15 million. And we're trying in FY25 to bump it up to $30 million. The commission's report recommended $60 million. So we're trying to chip away at that, but the fact that we were able to go from 1.5 to $15 million in 5 years is largely the result of everyone in Western Massachusetts saying that we needed to have more funding going to rural school aid, because the fiscal challenges that we're facing in our schools are just too much for communities to handle. So, you know, again, trying to get rural school aid up to 30, doing 100% school transportation reimbursement, regional school transportation. If we can get that non-resident for pupil funding up to 1.5, that will be more money. And then I think the minimum school aid, the minimum per pupil aid, if we can get that up to $100, that will also make a significant difference in schools. So short term, we're looking at the budget, the FY25 budget, to be able to get some money reasonably. Long term, we have to win over the hearts and minds of folks with the rural schools bill. And we have a new chair of the education committee coming in. So I had the chair of the education committee come out, because a lot of times that's one of the best ways for me to get people on board with these ideas. And we took her on a tour around the area, and she went to Hallamont, we were in Sunderland. I can't even remember the tour now, and it wasn't even that long ago. But we did bring her around so that she could see. Oh, she went up to Mohawk too, where we had a panel of students and parents and educators.
but she's retiring, so I'm reintroducing this bill and then have to get the new chair of the education committee on board and out here. So that's, you know, that's part of the work that I'll be undertaking at the beginning of next year.
Ned.
Well, all that's being discussed is of great concern to me, and you just mentioned the appearance in Western Mass of the former chair of the education. I was there with Sue Lively at that
yes,
meeting.
Yes, that's right. I'm remembering now.
It was a great discussion involving younger people. And
the kids were incredible. The students were really amazing. I was just back at Mohawk a week and a half ago for a panel discussion about public service, you know, to your point, trying to get young people involved and concerned, you know, about their communities and getting them involved in public service. And many of the students who are around the table for that panel presentation were, came up afterwards to talk with me. I remember you. You were incredibly powerful that day. So it was good. But we're going to have to do another show for the new chair of the education committee so that we can bring them along, hopefully.
Anyone from the public that's here? Devin, Pat,
well,
Barbara, Devin.
I'll just say thank you for bringing people around because that's what we need. You know, I mean, like you said, Jim McGovern and this education person, and I think keep that up because if they don't come here, they think Western Mass is Springfield or Worcester, and it's way more. So thank you.
We had the Secretary of Transportation out as well. We did an hour-long presentation at Franklin Regional Council of Governments about the challenges that Franklin County is facing when it comes to roads. And then we took her on a bus down a dirt road. Unfortunately, it wasn't like today. It wasn't super muddy, but there are a lot of washboards. It was a dream of mine to get stuck on a mud road.
Either worse than the dirt roads.
We give them some tours.
She's actually from a rural community in Northern Indiana, I want to say, and she gets it. She was more than willing to try to help us out on several issues, including taking a look at ways that the state could support funding for the unpaved roads legislation that I offered. So we'll keep having them out here. I had the housing chair out. I just had the energy committee chair out to Sunderland on Friday. So we'll just keep inviting them, and if they want to come and want to be helpful, we're trying to win them over.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Just Brian, and then you. And you got it. Go ahead, Brian. Yeah.
In terms of our infrastructure needs, there was, you know, we reiterated the concern to you, and what can you do about it? And I assume we should be pursuing Representative McGovern as well for federal assistance, because this last aid that came through a earmark in the most recent budget bill that they passed. And I'm really glad they're considering earmarks again because it makes people work together, you know, across the aisle.
And it's the only way many of our rural communities see any money.
Yeah. So anyway, I just want to be clear, we should still be going after
yes. McGovern, you know, at the federal level, they're able to make much larger awards. Yeah. I could never get an earmark to fund a project of even the salt shed size. Yeah. You know, I might be able to get, you know, $50,000 or $100,000 if I'm lucky. Like, but
we'll take it.
$10,000.
But
we're creative with small bits, even. We come up with a plan.
Sold!
Yes, I'll take it.
Okay. I just want to be clear about that. We should
For that size of an award, absolutely. And, you know, it's hopefully we can get this bill through, which would provide a foundation for communities. But, you know, this is something I'm hearing in every single community in the First Franklin District is infrastructure needs. Education, know. So, yes.
There was discussion a couple of years ago about DECAN doing a study of all of the emergency service facilities in all of the towns in the Commonwealth, like ranking them in terms of giving some kind of priority to ones that do today. Is that still happening, or is that?
I don't know if DECAN did. I know that the auditor's report, Auditor Bump did the report on municipal buildings and really dug deep on Western Mass specifically. And I believe that there's a listing in that report.
Yeah. There should be a flashing light next to me.
There should be a flashing light next to me.
It's pretty sad in some ways. But we do our best. We keep chugging.
Yeah,
chugging. Jonathan.
The closer, because mine's a little more life-affirming. But
you're not the closer. I haven't had my full
chance
yet.
Okay, there you go. So, but first I just want to give a shout-out to Congressman McGovern, because he actually wasn't toured here. Like, he did what Natalie did for his whole congressional district, like, just made the rounds, and it was epic.
He's pretty awesome.
You know, it was pretty awesome.
He is my former boss, so I have to
Yeah, say. I know. You worked in his office. Yeah. And good lineage. So I have came with two talking points, but now I have three. I would just want to add my voice to one. But the first was to say that after we're done here, I'm going to give Robin gave me or I'm going to give Natalie the 5-minute tour of our place, because and show her. I think this space with the senior center, the library, Hilltown Youth, Fire and Rescue is a model for repurposing rural spaces, and I think we've just gotten started in terms of tapping resources and stuff. So I want to show her like what's happening in this space. The second thing was to say, this is the one that wasn't on my radar, and that's just to add my voice to the ambulance thing, because we are an aging community, but the ones who aren't aging, a lot of them are spending their time getting thrown off a 30-foot trapeze that's out there. And we have, that's why we have 3 layers of insurance. We had our first trip with an ambulance in 20 years, and it was precautionary. It was just like somebody, Arlie, he's our, you know, he just said, and Tim was there too, is one of our first responders, and they just said it's better, it's good practice to, like, the person walked, you know, to the parking lot, to the car, but they went in the ambulance. But God forbid if there should ever be a time when we really need the ambulance. So there is, so I just want to add my voice to that. And then lastly was to say that about the civic involvement in the youth piece, is about half of our youth program, about, we have run a summer camp, a licensed summer camp here every year. Half the folks come out of the Mohawk system. But what I wanted to point out is when I saw Tom walk in, Justin Lively was not, we didn't have this program when he was here, I guarantee you he would have been on that trapeze, but he grew up, cut his teeth at the Heath Fair, and he was a photographer at the time and is an amazing woodworker. But he did this beautiful photo album of the town, basically, and the Heath Fair. And he, what we call in therapy, like, cathected to this space. He grew up here and he came back. He owns a, is co-owns a business, the Shelburne Farm and Garden, and is got a family here. I don't know if they're living in Heath, but they're in the Hilltowns. And what I wanted to say is our, it's a day program. We're looking at ways of making, having a sleepaway option for the camp. But my kids, I've never liked the word, I was called a workshop. I'm trying to build an ensemble. You know what I'm trying to do in the recovery theater. But the kids always call it camp because it's like, it's sentimental for them. It means like it's, we're getting in their hearts, you know, like it's their camp experience. And a lot of the people that come from Connecticut and Amherst and Northampton say, you should be charging $10,000. We'd be paying this easily in Fairfield County or in Amherst. And we don't, and we're committed to that, as you know. But I, my own kid is in that same genre. So supporting the arts here, supporting the youth, like giving kids this experience and the school piece, it's how they grow these attachments and come back. So I just wanted to stir that into the batter. And our asks are much more humble. I mean, this is the town space, so I want to respect that boundary, but just say that creating those kinds of experiences for youth is really important, that happens here in our, on our, you know, ground and soil. And there's more ways to measure wealth than money. And the Hilltowns are rich in experiences, from Berkshire East to what we're doing here out there, and, you know, and what and in Goshen, the IMA, and, you know, the music, and Hackler, we went to college together. You know, there's just gems all over the place. And the more we can create, you know, support the arts and youth and sports and youth, the more that the things that people are talking about are going to happen. We'll get more Justin Lively's in town and more, and he's one of the people that steps up and does service, but we need more people to have that experience, that's all I'm saying.
Thanks, Jonathan.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Anybody else?
I do have one more question.
Okay.
About East-West Rail.
Yes.
I know we hear a lot about the southern proposal, which is from Springfield out to Pittsfield, but there still seems to be some bubbling, and well, I heard something in WAMC the other day about that the northern branch is still being considered too.
Yes.
What do you hear?
So I'm on the working group. We just had our last public hearing was on Thursday of last week. There is a website for that. It's called the Northern Tier Project. So there's a website there. It has all of the presentations that have been given so far, including cost projections. So they have put out two alternatives, they're called, so two of the eight scenarios that they've put forward as the best scenarios to consider moving forward. And we'll be sitting down with MassDOT hopefully soon to talk about those two alternatives and identify potential funding streams. Whatever we decide will still need to be designed and engineered and permitted and then actually funded for construction. So that's the next step there.
That would be a game changer.
It would be a game changer. It really would be. It would really be phenomenal. So yes, we are still working on that, and we've just sort of gotten to the end of the feasibility study and now need to take those alternatives forward to figure out which one's the best one.
Yeah. So we own an auto repair shop in Charlemont, and there's a train tracks, and the trains go by all the time.
Yeah.
So would they? Those are like freight trains.
Yeah.
Would that be the track they use?
Yes.
Oh, that would be cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I heard it would be like North Adams, maybe Greenfield, maybe Amherst. They even threw out Shelburne Falls in the newspaper. I was like, oh my god.
Yeah.
But okay, it would be that track.
It just goes right along Route 2.
Okay.
Yeah. There used to be passengers.
That's off. It would help us out a lot more.
Yeah.
They dropped a car off and take a transit to work.
And now they used to go to Boston and back, you know, in a day to see a Red Sox game or whatever it happened to be. So, you know, we also have, in the last year, have also established the Massachusetts Office of Outdoor Recreation, which has the tremendous ability to help with our economy, particularly in Charlemont, but certainly all of Western Massachusetts. And you know, when you're talking about kids falling in love with the arts and the outdoors and bringing young families out to the region, I think outdoor recreation as well as the creative economy have a real, we have a real opportunity there.
Quick follow-up. What was the name of the group? What was the ambulance, the study, the group that you used an acronym for the group that was studying the emergency services? It started with a D or something?
DCAM.
Yes, about DCAM.
Okay. Capital Asset.
Okay. And I also just wanted to go on record and say Sue Lively knows Justin too. You're a friend of Justin's also. I just saw Tom when I walked in. He was in the atrium.
And you're sitting right by.
He was in the atrium. I just wanted to qualify.
Thanks for giving me a little bit of the credit.
Yes, yeah. I know you had something to do with bringing Justin to this area. Good job.
Thank you. Tom?
Well, I have a subject, but I'm going to need just a little bit of help from you.
Uh-oh.
I mean, we had a speaker about the education process and how they are, well, it sounds like they want to make larger regional school districts. And
oh, the sustainability study? They're
going to
do a sustainability study. They're in the process of it, yeah.
Yeah.
To see what the recommendation would be.
Yeah.
Right.
But I don't know, has that workshop, have you heard about anything about that sustainable?
It's ongoing right now. They're having meetings right now.
Yeah, I know they're trying to get some kind of a committee. Maybe they have it, I'm not sure.
Yeah, they've been having meetings.
Yeah, they have reps for each, from each of the towns involved.
Yeah, I think there's, I kind of think there's two different sustainability studies going on. The ones that's
through Mohawk.
The one that, through Mohawk. But there's also this group that we just got the letter from. And I believe they've been in touch with Natalie as well. I forget his name, Larry something, from Michelle from Buckland. And they're doing, I think it's a separate, I think it's separate from the other one. They're doing a sustainability study on how to help our community survive. And I know he referred to you in his letter that he had talked with them, that they had some contact with you. So unfortunately, they have very similar names. So, but they're actually, I think, two separate entities.
Two different studies going on.
Yeah. One is really school-focused, and I think the other one is really community-focused.
Yeah, and it's more, sustainability. Yeah, and advocacy. It feels like what Larry's working on, and whereas the sustainability study is happening in.
Yeah. But I think it's easy to confuse them because they both use sustainability in their title.
How about you, Lisa?
So the points that I was trying to pull together for speaking about have actually already been covered, which is really the rural district issues that we're facing on so many different levels, which I know you're very familiar with.
Yeah.
So any help is always appreciated.
I'm just texting with McGovern's office to see if I can get you an answer while I'm here.
Oh, great.
Okay. I was just going to say one follow-up on what Tom said, and I'm sure this is something you hear every place you go. Rural communities are held to many of the same standards that the bigger cities are held to, and they are enormously painful for us.
If
both
doable,
physically,
some not doable,
and financially, and sometimes just impossible to implement. You know, and I'm thinking like the requirements now for police departments, or the requirement now for people who are on the Board of Health.
Board of Health is huge.
And the training that they have to have in order to be on the Board of Health. It's just making it impossible for towns that are 700 people, counting kids, counting newborns, to expect a community to be able to do that is just outrageous.
At every level, because we got a large DPH grant, which a lot of people know. It requires us to have 50 new kids a year through our programs. So does Worcester, so does Springfield, so does Boston. The same quota is for, like, we're supposed to, which I'll make it, happen, but that's just crazy.
So I just wanted to bring it up. Tom was talking about trying to get more people involved. Well, who wants to be involved?
No,
it's that complicated.
I hear you on that. And, from a legislator's perspective, we're pushing back every single chance that we get. The most recent example I can give of that is the Affordable Homes Act that was introduced by the governor as a housing bond bill. If you do a control find and search for rural in that document, the word appears once. If you search for gateway cities, for example, they might appear 10 times. So we felt it was incumbent upon us to say, okay, if you really want to be serving rural communities, ensure that affordable housing is being built in outside of the 495 corridor. These are the changes that you can make to better serve rural communities and ensure that we're eligible for these grants. any funding that's coming through, we have to make sure that the number of units is not something like 50 units have to be produced in order for you to be eligible for some of this funding. We might need 3 or 5 or 10. That's what makes sense for many of our small communities. So we've been advocating with the chair of the housing committee, with the bonding committee, we're at Ways and Means, trying to make sure that when that comes out, the word rural appears more than once. And the programs and the line items actually work for our communities, because what we've seen in previous housing bond bills is that it just doesn't. So we're fighting for that every chance we can.
I've been holding that all that time. And I didn't forget it.
Your turn.
All I'm going to do is just say thank you to everyone for a couple reasons. One, for the information that they bring, the questions, your willingness to come here and listen to us, and to assist us when you're able. Each person who is here, many of the people who are here, have held multiple seats, positions in this town. Currently holding multiple seats and positions in this town. So I piggyback wholeheartedly on this this need that we have to figure out a way to get people involved. And as individual towns, we're not always certain how best to do that. We do need help. And that isn't necessarily a financial thing. We just need to figure out better, more creative ways or have more assistance in getting more involvement. As you look at the people, I say this and people get mad at me, but sometimes when we're looking at the age of the folks that are here, people are going to retire. They finish. They fit. I know. It's not about age. I meant being retired from a position. Just they move on.
There's three people in this room that are under the age of 60.
So this is a real issue for us in small towns, and it's not just Heath. I know it's not just Heath. That's across the board. So that's something to follow up on. But I wanted to just finish with what our next task is. So the Select Board and the Finance Committee are going to have probably a hour-long plus meeting. We're going to talk about our budget, and we're going to try to hammer away on every $50 in the budget. That's where we're at this point. But one of the things we're going to talk about, Finance Committee doesn't know this because it's a surprise to them, but so one of the things we're going to talk about is the salaries of the people who work in the town of Heath. There's about 20 employees, all different types of hours. Not everybody 40-hour people. Some, I don't know what the smallest amount is, but they're all over the board. And we have a process for which we set their wages that's created way before my time. I don't know if that was in Brian's period of time or before him, but a process was put together for this grading of, you know, level of responsibility, all that type of thing. And then there's this gauge for which people fall in, the lowest part of that grade and the highest, right? And their salary can be anywhere in there. And then that changes every year because people get COLAs, cost of living raises, which, okay, you get a raise, but it's supposed to offset the cost of living that's gone up, so it's really not a raise, right? It's just helping you survive and pay for your bills. So every year, or for a handful of years now, I've been insistent, and I drive people crazy, of wanting to talk about longevity raises and merit raises, and this really important, and every time we get to it, we get talking about it, and then we have to cut it. But for some reason, the people are still working here after 20 years. That blows my mind. The reason I bring it up is it doesn't happen outside of municipal work. If someone worked someplace for 20 years in the private sector and never got a raise for merit, they wouldn't stay. Unless they were forced to because they had no place else to go. So it always shows me the heart for which people work in municipal work in these small towns, the heart they have. And that's a conversation we're going to have again tonight, and I'm going to try to put it out there, and I'm going to try to get everyone a raise, because at the end of the day, if you don't let people know you're doing that and you don't give it to them, how do you wake up the next day and know that you can't have it because we really can't afford to give it to you because we got to get a salt shed, we got to get a fire department, we got to pay for the ambulance service. At some point in time, right, we have to figure it out.
Don't forget the school.
The school. Right? So that's a really hard conversation. And to boil it down, it's going to be about $17,000 tonight. We're going to have to make a decision if we can afford $17,000. After the COLA. Mm-hmm. So it's...
the raises?
It's, yeah. Yes. And these are those numbers that... $17,000, I own a business. That would be nothing. But here it's going to be a big deal. It's going to be a big deal. So that's kind of like my little ending of why all those other things are important. Because then we could tackle this on our own.
Right.
right? We can tackle that.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, so much of this is about changing things structurally for how the Commonwealth supports rural communities. Because, you know, if I came in with a $17,000 earmark for you, that doesn't help you next year at all. And so the sustainability of it, it just, you know, it is the real issue. And we really just need to keep pushing back and trying to get a recognition of what our rural communities are facing, not only in our schools, but also in health, in transportation, in infrastructure. It's really looking at it holistically to try to support our communities as a whole.
Right. So we thank you.
I thank you. I love coming out to eat. I did get an earmark for the fair to do some infrastructure repairs, and because our FY24 budget came in so far below what our benchmarks were supposed to be, the earmark was subject to 9C cuts. So it was cut in half to $25,000, but I think they're in the process of redoing a roof with that
$25,000.
It's done.
There we go. I'm glad. I was hoping for a sewer system, a septic line or something.
Yes.
But
that's
instead, we've got a
25,000.
Exactly.
That's next.
New pump house.
And I'm going to leave this with you. This is just a list of the legislation that I introduced with. I gave this to you last year when I first introduced it, but it has updates on the bills just so you have it. Okay, you all have my number and my email address, so please, if you think of anything else, just give me a link to your email, and I will get back to you as soon as I get back from Jim's office on the congressionally directed spending, as well as CPS.
Okay,
thank you.
Thank you.
Yes.